Join with me in Romans 13 this morning is where we are going to be studying. And it's interesting, while you are turning there, we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 7. And we're going to be looking at these verses, reading them in just a moment. While you're turning there, we're going to be looking at a passage of Scripture that is dealing with the role of government and the Christian response to government. So it's interesting that while you're finding your place, I have a couple of other announcements for you just to be aware of. We will today, once again, be making voter registration available for you. So if you've not yet registered to vote, you can do that here this morning. And then next Sunday, we've participated the last few years in Life Chain. And this is an opportunity for us to have a opportunity to express our support of the pro-life position. And that is next Sunday, and it is from 2:30 until 3:30, and you're going to meet at the Hardee's on Kerr and Market, and the parking lot there will be a place for you to park. And if you want more information about that, Jason Ouse is overseeing that. You can see him. You can ask me about it as well. But again, that is next Sunday from 2:30 until 3:30, and it's an opportunity for us to express really through a public but quiet way of showing our support for pro-life. And so if you're interested in that, that is next Sunday. Romans 13, I'm going to begin reading in verse 1, and I'm going to read down through verse 7. Paul writes this, he says, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive themselves to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." We've made a little bit of a transition from chapter 12 into chapter 13. In the latter part of chapter 12, Paul had discussed interaction primarily between brothers and sisters in Christ. He did talk about our relationship with people that are outside of the house of faith. He talked a lot about our love and how we treat people. Verse 14 of chapter 12, "Bless them that persecute you, bless and curse not." He talked about, at the end of that chapter, verse 17, "Recompense to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men." Verse 21, "Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." Paul had been talking about, at the end of chapter 12, he had been talking about interpersonal relationships. He talked about our relationships within the body. He talked about how we are to rejoice with those whom are rejoicing. We are to weep with those that are weeping. And we are to be peacemakers. We are to be people, whether it is from people within the community of faith or outside of the community of faith, we should be people that are in the pursuit of peace. If someone violates us, if someone sins against us, we are not to take justice into our own hands. He had said that God is God. God will hold those people accountable. They will stand before him. You are not their righteous judge. That is God's place, not yours. Now, in that context, as I mentioned, he is talking about interpersonal relationships. Okay, this is me and you. Now, he makes a shift, and he is going to talk to us about the role of government. Because God has, in his will, within his plan in life, he has created human government. I clicked one too far, guys. If you could bring up my fancy picture again, I'm not sure what I did. He has created human government. You might say it this way. He has created the institute of family. He has instituted the... I just did it to you guys again. I'll leave it alone. I won't touch it anymore. He has instituted the institution of family. He has instituted the institution, if you will, of the church. And he has also instituted human government. And so today we want to understand what is the Christian's role within our civil government. So Paul is going to talk to us about the Christian's interaction with governing authorities. These verses clearly inform Christians that we are to live in such a way that we are to demonstrate honor and we are to demonstrate respect to those that are in our government, to those that are in positions of authority. He is going to say, basically, as Christians, for you and for me, we are called to be model citizens. We should be law-abiding people who live by the laws of our land. We should be people who are honoring and showing respect to those who are in political leadership. And yes, we are to show that honor and we are to show that respect regardless of whether there is an R or a D beside their political affiliation. This is something that Christians are called to do. They are called to show honor and reverence and respect to those that are in political office. As we read through these verses, there are probably questions that are going to come to your mind, as they do for me, of things we'd like to know, more information about our relationship with human government. But we must understand and remember that the Bible and Paul, this is not a political manifesto. Paul is not leading a political revolution. Paul is not out to even overthrow the political environment in which he lived. Paul is not out for you and for me to usher in the kingdom and to win people through government. That has never worked and never will. Paul is not on a political campaign. He is not seeking to overthrow even the carnal, ungodly Roman government under which Paul was living and ministering. Jesus, Paul, the apostles, and all the other biblical writers were not political activists. They were not revolutionaries. Paul does not call here for the overthrow of the Roman government. Instead, he calls for right living. He calls for a right relationship with our civil leadership. He is calling for believers to be ones that obey the laws of the land. Now that raises questions in your mind, and we'll get to them, I hope. Rather than promoting rebellion, Paul commands Christians to obey and to honor that God has placed in positions of leadership. Any act of disobedience to government should be carefully weighed for biblical validity before action is taken. Is there time, if you're getting nervous, are there times that we disobey human government? Yes. We'll look at a couple of illustrations. Yes. But they are rare. They are very, very rare. They are few and far between. Even godly men who lived under ungodly governments demonstrated respect and honor to the king that they were serving under. Men like Joseph, men like Moses, men like Daniel, Jesus, and the apostles. For instance, Daniel and his friends did not disobey government. They lived within the government of Babylon. They lived under that until a law was passed that clearly violated God's commandments, or they were called to practice emperor worship. You think back to Daniel's friends and their refusal in Daniel chapter 3 to bow down and to worship the statue that Nebuchadnezzar made to himself. And he commanded that all people come and bow down and worship before the statue that I have made. Worship me, the emperor. And Daniel's friends said, no way, not going to do it. And as a response, we know the story, they are cast into the fiery furnace for their statement of faith and disregarding a law that they could not obey. What about Daniel himself? He refused to pray only to the king. In Daniel 6, you know the story that those men had come to trap Daniel. They couldn't find anything in Daniel's life to lay hold of, and so the only thing they could find was he was a committed believer. He was committed to God, and so they have the king pass this law that if anybody prays to anybody but you, the king, for 30 days, they should be thrown into the lion's den. And Daniel said, then throw me in. Because at this, it was not in line with what God had said. So there are examples, and we'll get to some more perhaps today or maybe even tonight. So the questions we want to answer is, what is the role of government? What is the role of government in the life of the believer? Given Exodus 20, verse 13, where God has said, do not kill, can a Christian serve in the military and in war, knowing that they may be asked to take the life of another person? As Christians, are Christians responsible to pay, to obey what we might call bad laws, not immoral ones, but bad laws or incompetent leaders? How do we treat those who hold political office? Can a Christian serve in political office? Is political activism the answer to man's problems? These are some of the questions that we want to try to understand as we look at these verses and look at some other parallel passages in the Bible talking about our role in government. And so let's look at some principles drawn from primarily Romans 13. We'll look at some other places, time permitting. Number one, civil government is established by God. God made it. God created it. God established human government by his divine plan. It was God's plan for him to institute human government. And we'll look at the reasons why. It was something that God thought up. It was his creation, just like marriage, just like the church. This was a creation by God. It is, therefore, our responsibility, Paul is going to argue, to live as model citizens, to obey the human government that God has given to us. So let's take a look at the text. Look at verse 1. Let every soul be, look at the next word, subject unto the higher powers. This word is a word that means to arrange under, to be subordinate, to be subject, to obey, or to submit to the control of another person, to yield to one's admonition. This Greek word was used very often in the military setting where they were to rank under the command of a leader. Here, he's obviously not using this word in a military sense. So in a non-military setting, this was a word that referred to the voluntary attitude of cooperation. Submission to the ruling authorities is to be given willingly, but not uncritically. There are occasions in which the government officials demand something that is contrary to God's word. In fact, in chapter 12, verse 2, Paul had said, and be not conformed to this world, and be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. There are times that the government demands you do something that is morally wrong or something that violates Scripture. Yes, we are called to civil disobedience. Take a look at an example. Go back to Exodus for just a moment, all the way back to Exodus chapter 1. Exodus chapter 1, let's look at an illustration, an Old Testament illustration of a time in which a commandment given by a leader was disobeyed. It's all the way back in Exodus chapter 1. Look at verse 15. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiphrah and the name of the other was Puah. And he said, when ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, in other words, they're getting ready to give birth, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. It's a decree told by the government. But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. And the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, why have you done this thing and have save the man child alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered before the midwives come in unto them. In other words, we just couldn't get there in time. Now that was probably on purpose. Therefore, God dealt well with them, with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses. Okay? And so, in this case, they were told to kill these children because they are Hebrew children, and out of fear, the government didn't want them to live, and so kill them. The midwives said, not going to do that. Knowing that there could very well be ramifications of that decision, there could be consequences that would come into their lives that would perhaps even, they might even lose their lives based on the fact that they were going to obey God rather than men. Now let's be honest, to this point anyway, in our government, in our culture, we've never faced that. We've never faced that, and pray that we never do. Submission to the ruling authorities was to be given willingly, but not uncritically, as the example in Exodus shows us. In Romans 12:13-2, Paul warns that disobedience to the authorities is dangerous. Look at verse 2. He says, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. This is a very strong warning to say that you are to give obedience and you are to be a citizen that lives by the law of the land, because those men and women are placed in leadership by God's design. They're there because God put them there. Now we'll look at some verses later if we have time. Even Nebuchadnezzar is called the servant of God. And in fact, Jeremiah writes to the people and he says, God said, obey them. That's what he said. The heathen government of Babylon, God said, yes, for now, Nebuchadnezzar is my servant. You are called to serve him, even though he was ungodly. Civil government is given by God, notice, for the protection of its citizens and the restraining of evil. Look at the second part of verse 1, where he talks about, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Okay, he is talking about their authority that is given to them by God. No power that is given to anybody, no power is given to anybody unless it is appointed to them by God. God has established social order and he has established authority through civil government. Now notice, those that are placed then in the role of civil government, they are given a particular responsibility. He says in verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the saint. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. Now he talks about, at the end of verse 4, he says that the evil should be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. There is a responsibility that is given toward a human government for the protection of its citizens. That protection, now, we know that in our land in particular, we have the right to defend our homes. If someone breaks into our home, we have the right given to us by our government to protect ourselves in order to prevent somebody from causing bodily harm to us or to our family and to our kids. And most of us, men in the room, you come in my house, you try to get to my children, you try to get to my wife. If it's you or me, it's going to be you. Because there is a sense in which we have, our government allows us that kind of protection. But when it comes to criminal activity, like men who behead women at work, there is a responsibility given by our government to make sure that justice is handed out. And that is given by God for the protection of the people of this country. And so when we want to roll over and play dead and pretend that the world is this great, warm, fuzzy place, there is evil and it is real. And God said, as a government, you have the right and the responsibility to protect your people. And yet when governments turn their guns and their weapons on their own people and they destroy and kill innocent people, God will judge them. That is wrong. That is carnal. That is evil. But God says this is not the responsibility that is given to you as a person who lives in this country to mete out that justice. Ultimately, they are going to stand before God. But in the meantime, the government is given the responsibility to hold people accountable when they commit violent, carnal, evil acts. Now, I just to bare my soul for a minute. I don't know what your reaction was when you read that story about that woman having her head chopped off at her place of business, but I was angry. Because there is a sense in which that is, if you can use the word, righteous anger, that someone who does that to an innocent person, they have violated God's commandments and they need to be held accountable by the government. God says, I have given that authority to human government. I have given that responsibility to civil government. They have the responsibility to provide order, to restrain evil, to promote good, and to punish those that commit evil actions. I remember when I was in high school, I was in with a group of friends, and you say stuff and do stuff that you don't even know what you're talking about. And we walked around with, you know, anarchy symbols on our shirts. And my English teacher looked at me and she said, do you even know what that means? Of course I know what it means. She said, well, what does it stand for? Yeah, I don't know. Just, I have no idea. What's it stand for? She says, it means anarchy. What does that mean? I had no idea. I'm, 14 or whatever. Anarchy is not God's design. God's design is social order, that those who violate the laws of the land are to be held accountable. While individuals are forbidden to practice justice, governments have been delegated that authority that is necessary to protect people from evil. Yes, I believe this includes capital punishment for those who commit crimes, that they take the life of an innocent person, and ultimately the government has the freedom to do that and the right to do that. And yes, that includes a military having the responsibility to protect its people. Yes, probably tonight, if we have time, we'll talk about when is war right? When is war just? And didn't God say that thou shalt not kill? Yes, he did. And in that context, he's talking about me taking the life of another person out of anger and vengeance. And I have no right to do that. But he says elsewhere in Ecclesiastes, there is a time to kill. There is an opportunity. The word sword, we're ahead of ourselves a little bit, talks about the justice that a government has to carry out the protection of its people. A government has that right, has that freedom. Individuals do not. We don't. So can a military person be a Christian? Yes. Can a Christian serve in the military? Yes. The leaders of a nation who are called to administer justice to those who violate the law, this is not given, as I mentioned, to individuals. There must be proportionality to the punishment. God has given civil government the responsibility to protect its citizens through the restraint and through meting out activity and through meting out judgment that is proportionate. Now notice, the next principle here we want to look at is God has ordained this. We've already touched on this a little bit, but in verse 1 he says that no powers that be ordained of God. Proverbs 8 says this, by me kings reign. And rulers decree justice. By me, princes rule and nobles, all the judges of the earth. Daniel chapter 2, verse 21. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. John 19, verses 10 through 11. This is an interesting passage. Then Pilate said to Jesus, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the power to crucify you and power to release you? And Jesus answered and said, "You could have no power at all against me unless it be given to you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." In other words, Jesus says, "I'm here only because my Father willed it. I'm only here because God has brought history to this point." We know that human government is not perfect. But God has, based on his general revelation, has called even an unbelieving governmental official to practice what's right and what's wrong. Origen, or early Christian writer, said this. He said, "God's judgment against the authorities will be just if they have used the powers they have received according to their own ungodliness and not according to the law of God." That's a strong warning, isn't it? Acts chapter 25. Paul said, "I am standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also very well know. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything worthy of death, I do not refuse to die. But none of those things is true of which these men accuse me. No one can hand me over to them. I appeal to Caesar." Paul used the government as it was arranged to defend himself as he went through these trials and these accusations being laid against him. Then again in verse 4, again, this idea that they are ordained by God, for he is the minister of God. He is the minister of God. This word is the same word, diakonos, where we get our English word deacon. He uses this word to mean a minister or a servant. He is one who executes the commands of another, especially of a master or a servant. The servant of a king can mean deacon, as I mentioned. He is the servant of God. Governmental officials are the servants of God who deserve our respect. Look at verse 7. "Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." You are called to respect the civil leaders that God puts into place. The first presidential election that I remember was Gerald Ford running against Jimmy Carter. It's the first one I remember. And I remember my dad was very into politics, and so we watched all the returns come in. And I was young. I mean, I was a little kid, but I remember sitting there. I didn't really fully grasp all that was going on. You know, Watergate was over my head. I didn't get that. But I'm sitting there, and it comes out that Jimmy Carter has just won the presidency. I will never forget my dad's reaction. He looked at the television, and he said, and I quote, "Oh, no." He got up. He had to get up in those days and, like, walk to the TV. He got up and pushed the little button, the TV went off, and he went to bed. He never said anything more about it. Well, he said a lot about it over the next 4 years. You know, car lines, gas lines, all that stuff. Did the world end when Jimmy Carter became president? Oh, no. Well, maybe it did. Was God in heaven saying, "Oh, man, I was rooting for Ford. Now what are we going to... What am I going to do? I've lost control. Carter's president. What? Oh, I think my plan of salvation has just been destroyed." Come on. I mean, what about the day Obama won? Ugh. How do you feel about it? It's over! What are we going to do? I just know it. He's the Antichrist. I know it. You know, and all the books are written. Armageddon. You know, Jesus is dead because Obama's... Come on! Who's your God? The man sitting in the Washington White House or the man sitting in heaven? God did not stop to be God when whoever got elected that you don't like. God is still God. He's still on the throne. And like it or not, Obama is God's ordained leader. I don't like that. God said, I didn't ask you. I mean, really, where is your hope? I mean, I made the mistake one time. Am I going to make it again? I admitted publicly that I watched CNN. And I got like hate mail. Aren't you a Republican? Don't you love Jesus? Don't. And then I had the audacity to say I didn't like Rush Limbaugh. And it was like, and I don't. Our pastor is a compromise. He doesn't love God. All human beings are biased. Every one of them. I don't care what news outlet you read or listen to. They're human. They have perceptions that are biased. It just is. But guess what? You have a God in heaven who said, I will put kings in place that I ordain, and it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, the plan that's going to win the day is mine, not his, not hers. It's my world. I didn't lose control when somebody got elected that gave you heartburn. Where, I mean, seriously, guys, where is your hope? Oh, then we shouldn't take part in politics. That is not what I'm saying. That'll probably be tonight at this rate, okay? That is not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, too often, our hope is in D.C., or it's in Raleigh, or it's in wherever, as if somehow the gospel of Jesus Christ is going to be destroyed because the right political party did not get elected. Folks, God said, I am going to work in this world in a way that will not always make sense to you. My ways are not your ways, God said. Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to the Lord. I can't tell you why this one wins and that one doesn't. I can't explain to you exactly what God is doing. But what I do know is that when countries go through times of persecution and political difficulty, the gospel, are you ready? The gospel grows. Might it be we need to be made a little more uncomfortable so that our real true hope is revealed and that our hope is in Jesus Christ and not in a political man? Where is your hope? That was all unscripted, free. You got it, free. But he has ordained them. He has placed them into positions of authority. I have this later on, but go to Jeremiah 25 for a minute. Go to Jeremiah 25. I was reading through these verses this week, and I was reading through them again this morning, and it's one of those moments. Maybe I'm the only carnal one in the room, but I don't think so. If I was God, I wouldn't have done this. Thankfully, for all of us, I'm not God. Amen. Look at Jeremiah 25. Look at verse 7. Jeremiah 25, verse 7. Yet ye have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that you might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to do your own hurt. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God of hosts, because you have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, what's the next two words? My servant, will bring them against this land and against the inhabitants thereof and against all the nations round about, and will utterly destroy them and make them an astonishment and a hissing and a perpetual desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of myrrh and the voice of gladness and the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass when the 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it a perpetual desolation. Now look over at chapter 27 and look at verse 6. Jeremiah writes this time, he says, "And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. And the beasts of the field I have given him also to serve him. And all the nations shall serve him and his son and his son's son until the very time of his land come. And then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. And it shall come to pass that the nation and kingdom which will not serve the same Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation will I punish, saith the Lord, with the sword and with famine and with pestilence, and I have consumed them by his hand. Therefore, hearken not to your prophets, nor to your diviners, nor to your dreamers, nor to your enchanters, nor to your sorcerers, which speak unto you, saying, ye shall not serve the king of Babylon, for they prophesy a lie unto you, to remove you far from your hand, that I would drive you out, and you shall perish. But the nations that bring their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him, those will I let remain still in their own land, saith the Lord, and they shall till it and dwell therein." What? Nebuchadnezzar was God's man for that time to hold Israel responsibility for their carnality. And yet God said, for this period of time, in this time in history, Nebuchadnezzar, you are my servant. In order for me to purify the nation of Israel, in order for me to preserve my nation, which I have promised to do, and I'm going to take you into Babylon, and I'm going to place you under his authority. Why? So that I can purify you, so that I can preserve you, and so later I can send you back. That was God's plan. Now, if you were sitting in Israel and this was read to you, hey, you know what? This Nebuchadnezzar guy is going to come. He's going to conquer our land, and you need to go serve him. What would your reaction be? Our reaction typically would be a negative one. And yet God used these circumstances. He used the coming of Babylon to demonstrate that, you know what? The hand of the king, the rise and the fall of the king is in my hands. And we know later on, when Nebuchadnezzar has his dream and he sees the course of history through this vision of this statue, he sees Babylon, he sees Medo-Persia, he sees Greece, and he sees Rome. And God says, all of that is under my sovereign care. It's under my will. It's under my plan. I know every king, I know every ruler that will ever rise, and every king and every ruler and president that will ever fall, they are in my sovereign care. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Now again, I snuck a look at my watch. We'll look at political involvement tonight. Because it doesn't mean that we throw our hands up and not be engaged. God has put us in a place where we are to be involved in the political climate of our country. And the problem is, too many Christians go off the other side and they sit home and do nothing, and then they're angry when things don't go the way they want. But he says, just know that these kings, these rulers are under my care. And then the last one we will look at today, we'll come back to this passage tonight and finish some more practical applications, is that civil, are you ready? This was not maybe the best place to end. Civil government has the right to levy taxes. That's what he says. That's what he says. It says in verse 6, "For this cause pay ye tribute, For they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. The establishment and the administration of a tax system derives from a legitimate set of duties and responsibilities given to the civil authorities as servants of God. Which, by the way, we talk about the idea of tithe. There was more than one tithe in the Old Testament, and they were given in a very real sense as taxes to fund the theocracy. Israel's government was a theocracy. They had to pay for it. Some of you listen to talk radio. It's like, we need this social program, we need that social program, we need this, we need that. Well, we're going to raise taxes to pay for it. Oh, you can't do that. Who's going to pay for it? Well, the government is. Where do you think their money comes from? Now, this isn't a promise to raise taxes so you pay for everybody's food, housing, medical care, whatever. No, 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 no. There is still personal responsibility, which we seem to have forgotten. Political statement, the only one I'll make. Okay? We seem to have forgotten that. But there is a sense in which these taxes are levied against people so that the government can fulfill its God-given responsibility, which primarily is the protection of its people. Even pagan governments, like the one that crucified Christ, collected taxes, and Jesus said, you give it to them. In Romans 13:6, Paul uses the word again, minister. Another servant. While the funds are not to be used for personal advantage, and they'll be held accountable if they do, they are to be used to allow the government to fulfill its God-given responsibility. In Romans 13:7, Paul uses the word render, translated King James, it's render. Some of the other translations, it is pay. It is the same word used in Matthew 22:21. It means to pay something that is already owed, to pay off a debt or a wage, or in this case, taxes. This is not promoting reliance on the state. It's not promoting the neglect of human responsibility to provide for food, clothing, housing. Taxes are to be levied so that the government can provide the care and love, or not love necessarily, but care and protection of their people. So as we end today, there's much I got. That's page 3 of 8. Simply this morning, ask yourself this question. Okay, again, caveat. Don't walk out of here saying Pastor Jay doesn't care about what happens in our country and he doesn't love America. If I gave you that impression, that was not my intention. Pastor Jay doesn't think we should be involved in politics. If I gave you that impression, that is not what I'm saying. But I simply want you to leave today being reminded of one simple truth. There is a God in heaven who is sovereign in the affairs of men, and that God has a plan that will never be destroyed, will never be thwarted, will never be undermined by any human government, because they are under his care. And then ask yourself this very simple question. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? I'm sure this morning I raised all kinds of questions. Good, come back tonight. We'll try to answer some of them. Human government, ordained by God, given responsibility by God, given to them for you and for me to honor and obey, and given so that God's plan for this world will happen the way he intends for it to happen. God is in control, and you can trust in that.